If you failed, wow. If you failed to get this when you came in, if you'll raise your hand, they'll make sure you get it. Everybody good? Oh. The lady who brings them. Anybody else? We're good. I forgot I was speaking this morning, and I had to run home and get my lesson. That's why I got up and went to the back. Not true. Hey, we're glad you're here. We have visitors with us this morning. If you see faces, members, if you see faces you don't know, speak to those around you and welcome them. We're going to be here now for a few minutes, longer than perhaps you're used to, and we're going to really start focusing our hearts and minds on the supper of the Lord. To our brothers and sisters in the annex, welcome. Let's focus together and bring ourselves to the table of the Lord in a few minutes. The best show, the best TV show ever made was the Andy Griffith Show. Nothing beats it. And if you're disagreeing with me, you have a right to be wrong. That's one beautiful thing about living in America. You have the right to be wrong, and some of you are exercising it right now. Episode 188 is an interesting one. I saw it not too long ago. It's a couple of weeks ago, and I got to thinking about it in regards to a lesson that I had wanted to bring you, and it was a perfect introduction and segue. Episode 188 is where Opie has an assignment to research some historical facts or information about Mayberry, where he lives. He's in high school. And he decides that he's going to research the background of the famous Battle of Mayberry during the American Revolutionary War. So he begins talking to different people in town and finds out that there are about four different families in town that claim their ancestor was the prime mover that enabled the forces, the militia of Mayberry, to win a conflict with the British. And they're all very fervent that it was their grandfather or great-grandfather or great-uncle who led the charge. One of the individuals in that discussion and disagreement is Clara Edwards. And in one really funny scene to me, Clara is telling Opie how it developed. And she reaches up and grabs a sword that belonged to her grandfather. And she said, he waved this in the air and he urged the citizens of Mayberry to the fight by saying that famous phrase, "Come on, boys, you want to live forever?" You think about that. That's probably not a great way to encourage men to go into battle. You come on, we're going to go die. You don't want to live forever, do you? I want you to think about that phrase as we move through our lesson this morning. I'm going to start in Acts chapter 16. I'm in Acts chapter 16. Paul also came to Derbe and to Lystra. And a disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. And he was well spoken of by the brethren who were in Lystra and Iconium. And Paul wanted this man to go with him. And he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those parts, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. I want you to step into that story because Luke tells it just so matter-of-factly that I'm not sure we really understand what a major decision it was for Timothy to agree to go with Paul on this journey. First of all, he's being invited by a man who says, before you go, you're going to be circumcised. Now, I'm not going into a lot of detail, and I'm certainly not trying in any way to be humorous or funny about this. Now, that's a pretty major procedure for a grown man. And for Timothy to succumb to that as the first step in following Paul says a lot about his commitment to this apostle. But it goes well beyond that. I want you to think about the fact that he is a young man, and for the first time in his life, he's leaving his mother and his grandmother, both of whom are spiritual giants in his mind. These are the two women that taught him truth, that brought him to the Lord. It wasn't that Greek father. I'm not saying his father was a bad man or that his father was a rascal in any way. I'm sure he loved his father greatly. But his father wasn't a spiritual influence in his house. And when Paul later writes to Timothy, he talks about the faith that first existed in his mother and his grandmother. So this is a big deal for this young man, son of a Jewish woman and son of a Jewish grandson of a Jewish woman, to leave home, to leave the saints who think highly of him there. It says a disciple was there named Timothy, and he was well spoken of by the brethren who were there. You know, we know what that's like. Periodically, we have people that are great parts of the family of God here. And for one reason or another, they end up moving. They go away. And it's difficult for us to release those people because they meant so much to us. And it's difficult for them to leave people who respect and honor and love them. That's not an easy parting. Add to that that Timothy's really not sure where they're going. This is not like signing up for a cruise. We're going to make our first stop here, and then our second stop will be here, and we're going to spend a couple of nights in this city, and then we'll go on to this other place. It's pretty much an open future. I'm sure if Timothy had said to Paul, before we go, can I ask where we're going? And Paul would have said, Lord knows, I don't. And that's what Timothy's signing up for. Paul's been there. Paul's an older man. Paul's an apostle. Paul's a miracle worker. Paul has great influence and great self-confidence. This is a young man who is urged to go with Paul, not knowing what awaits him. He is leaving safety. He is leaving security. He is going who knows where? God knows. Now, I'm going to add one more element to this whole thing and then start bringing us to what I want you to think about. I want you to go back two chapters to chapter 14. Chapter 14. And I want you to look with me at verse 19. Jews came from Antioch and Iconium, and having won over the crowds, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. Stop there for a moment. We're going to pick it up again. Stay in that text. I want you to imagine. Stay with me. This is important. I want you to imagine what it must have been like to have been stoned. As a boy, I remember walking down a street, coming home from school, and another boy, a few houses down from me, picked up a rock, and I wasn't looking, and he thought it would be funny to hit me with the rock, and he caught me in the side of the head, busted it open. I can still remember the impact of just one small rock hurled with a velocity that a boy could muster, and how painful that was. I cannot imagine a crowd of people with hand-sized rocks, not intending to just throw and hit, but throw and kill an individual. And I cannot, there is no experience in my life in which I could say, I understand how that must have felt. I cannot imagine. For him to be hit with stone after stone after stone, to be eventually knocked unconscious, and then to continue to be hit to the point that that crowd believed he was dead, and they dragged him probably by his robe, dragged him. They didn't carry him. It wasn't on a gurney. It wasn't in someone's arms. They dragged him through the streets of that city, outside the city, dropped the body, and walked away from it. And the disciples followed. His converts followed him there. And then it says in the next verse, while the disciples stood around him. You know, I want you to think about that. They're standing around him. His body is bloodied. It is broken open. It is bruised incredibly. And they don't even know what to do. You know, in this culture today, and because we've watched a lot of TV and we know a lot of doctors, the first thing we do is what? Feel for a pulse. Reach down, feel for a pulse. The disciples are, they're convinced, they're as convinced as the crowd that murdered him, he's dead. I need you to see that, because it's not a small thing that Paul has undergone here. While the disciples stood around him, might I add, I have no doubt, weeping profusely, groaning, crying, wailing that he is dead, he got up and entered the city. And the next day he went away with Barnabas to Derbe. And it says, after they had preached the gospel to that city and had made many disciples, they returned to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch. That's important. Because Timothy at Lystra saw that Paul. He saw him shortly after. We're not talking about months later. We're talking about days later. This Paul, still bruised, still recovering from the wounds of those stones, comes back to Lystra, and Timothy saw him. And then later, Paul comes back in chapter 16 that we just read. What's my point? Would you have joined Paul? After seeing what he suffered for preaching the gospel, would you join him? I want you to imagine that you're going to apply for a job, and the person who's interviewing you for the job says something to you along these lines. Well, the job that you're applying for is actually the job that I had here. And you said, just keep conversation going. Well, why are you leaving? And he says, well, I'll tell you, the job puts me in a situation where my health is deteriorated. I'm next to this radiation point, and it's taken all my hair, and it's taken my life and my body, and I'm going off to die. That's the job you're applying for. Would you stay there? Would you sit there and say, well, yeah, tell me, how much does it pay? When Paul invited Timothy to join him, he probably extended hands that were gnarled and broken by those stones as he tried to protect himself from the ones being hurled at him. He probably urged Timothy from a face that had scars and bruises and still open wounds from the stoning. And he is saying to Timothy, join me. Having seen what the Jews did to Paul, would you go? Knowing that it's likely to happen again? Because this is not the first time that's happened to Paul. And if Timothy asked, Paul would be very honest. He would have said, well, Timothy says, this is the only time that's happened? Well, actually not. I have been stoned by my enemies before, and I have been in shipwreck, and then there was a time I was beaten with rods, and I've been thrown into prison. And would you join Paul? And then you go to chapter 17, and that's where the disciples went, and I'm just going to summarize it there. You remember what happened in chapter 17? I'll tell you the city, it's Philippi. And when Paul is preaching at Philippi, the Jews who are angered and they incite the silversmiths of that city and the others, no, that's at Ephesus, he incites the people who owned the girl who was a slave that Paul had healed from demons, exorcised them from her. He was beaten with rods and thrown into prison. Now, we kind of lose sight of Timothy after that. As we do Luke, it appears that when they went to prison, Luke and Timothy and the others cleared out. I don't think in cowardice they cleared out. I think they just went to wait. They weren't sure what was going to happen. But Timothy stayed with Paul. After that, they reunited and continued their journeys. I'm going to tell you, Timothy's an incredible young man. His devotion to the gospel of Jesus Christ, as preached by Paul, his mentor, is amazing. And you're saying, interesting story, Ralph. What does it have to do with us? Come on, boys. You want to live forever? What about the journey we are called to make with our master? You know, I think it's really interesting and appropriate that what we have come here today to remember is blood and broken body. Blood and broken body. When we talk about honoring our Lord, it isn't the Lord who won some peace prize or the Lord who was named best speaker of his decade, or Time's Man of the Year. We are here this morning in this hour to honor the broken body and the bleeding Lord Jesus Christ. And he won't let us forget that. In Matthew chapter 10, when Jesus is calling disciples to follow him, verse 24 says, a disciple is not above his teacher. And then he says this in verse 34, do not think I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. I came to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his household. And he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And then this. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. And then this in chapter 16, after Peter has made the good confession that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, verse 24 says, he said to his disciples, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and what? Take up his cross and follow me. Now that appears to be spoken to the disciples, the apostles alone, but in Mark's version, it looks like Jesus then turned to, in the same context, the others in verse 34 and said he summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And then in Luke chapter 9, verses 22 through 27, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and be raised up on the third day. And he was saying to them all, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake, he is the one who will save it. For what is a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses or forfeits himself? And then in chapter 14, last verse, verses 25 through 27, a large crowd was going along with him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And here's the message, and here's what I want to say to you, and here's what you have to know. If you admired Timothy because of what we said about him this morning, because he was willing to follow Paul, knowing that it might result in great pain in his life and possibly the loss of life, God bless the heart of Timothy. Know this. This morning, you're not just eating a piece of bread and drinking some juice. to just honor Jesus. You are claiming to be his disciple. And he says, take up your cross. He is not calling you to a life of leisure, to a life of luxury, to a life of security and safety. Oh, I know, none of us this morning feared coming through a crowd that was hostile to come here and to serve our God and to sing praises to him. We didn't have to do that, but there are people in the world who have. And should that time come for us, I hope you will remember this. You cannot take this bread and this fruit of the vine, which is your covenant to give your body and blood for the Lord who gave his body and blood for you. Do not take this lightly. This is no small matter. This is a commitment by God's people to walk through the valley of the shadow of death, yes, even to go to death, to honor the Lord who died for you. No small matter. Let us partake with that in mind.